Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take stacks of research and sources and we'll try to find those aha moments. You know how it often goes in big stories, this huge cosmic promise gets made, and then like the next second, we're right back in the middle of messy human reality. It's this basic tension, right? Especially in ancient narratives. Today, we're doing a deep dive into just a handful of verses, Genesis 9, specifically verses 15 through 20. It's pretty short, but it's like a masterclass in storytelling. Big shift from this divine declaration to, well, a very human scene. Our mission really is to unpack these verses, see what insights are hiding there about, you know, God's promises and frankly, human imperfection. We'll see how these few lines kind of set the scene for so much that comes later. You might think, oh yeah, Noah, the rainbow, got it. But we're hoping to show you some layers, some foreshadowing that maybe offer a fresh look. Okay, so let's unpack this. We're picking up right after the flood story. The rainbow's just been established as the sign of the covenant. Now, usually we think of the rainbow as being for us, right? A reminder to humanity. But Genesis 9.16, it says something slightly different, quite profound, actually. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant. So the text says it's a sign for God himself. I will see it and remember. That's a different angle, isn't it?
It really is. And it's fascinating when you pause on that phrasing. It's probably not about God literally forgetting, like we might forget where we put our keys. An all-knowing being doesn't really forget. Instead, this language points to something more like a personal relational commitment.
Okay.
In that ancient context, remembering often meant more than just recall. It meant acting on behalf of someone, fulfilling a promise, bringing it into the present. So when God says, I will see it and remember, it's like God is binding himself to his own promise, making it solid, making it understandable for humans.
So it's less about memory and more about commitment, like setting the terms publicly.
Exactly. Think of it like a king engraving a treaty. It's not because he'll forget, but it declares his commitment, sets the framework. And there's real comfort in that, I think. It suggests the covenant strength is in God's faithfulness, his character, not necessarily ours.
Right. Not dependent on us remembering or even being faithful all the time.
Precisely. It's rooted in God's own consistency. It tells you something about the character involved, steady, committed.
Okay, so we have this profound, comforting idea, and then boom, verse 18 hits. And it feels, well, jarring is a good word for it. We go from this huge cosmic scene, the rainbow, the promise for the whole earth, and suddenly we zoom right in, super specific. Noah's three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The focus just shrinks dramatically. And then there's that little note tucked in there. Ham was the father of Canaan.
Mm.
It almost feels like a footnote, but yeah. It feels loaded somehow.
Oh, it's absolutely loaded. You've hit on a really critical point there. That parenthetical, Ham was the father of Canaan.
Yeah.
It isn't just a random genealogical fact. For the original audience, hearing Canaan, that would have immediately rung alarm bells.
Why is that?
Because the Canaanites were, you know, Israel's future adversaries, the people inhabiting the land they believed was promised to them. So slipping that name in right there, immediately after the covenant of peace, it's powerful foreshadowing. It's ominous.
Wow. Okay. So it's like a hint of trouble right on the heels of the promise.
Exactly. It's narrative genius in a way. It signals a really stark truth. God's promise not to flood the earth again, that's secure, everlasting. But the underlying issues, the human tendencies, the brokenness that led to the flood in the first place, those are still there.
So the world gets a wash, but human nature doesn't.
That seems to be the implication. The seeds of future conflict, of betrayal, of tension, they're being sown almost in the same breath as the promise of peace. It tells you the external reset doesn't automatically fix the internal human condition.
And then right after that, verse 20, it moves to Noah. Noah, a man of the soil, proceeded to plant a vineyard.
On one level, that sounds hopeful, right? Back to farming, cultivating the land, normal life starting again. It kind of echoes Adam, also linked to the soil, the Adama, a new beginning.
Yes. And that phrase, man of the soil, ish, had Adama. In Hebrew, it's very deliberate. It connects Noah directly back to Adam and the ground, Adama, from which humanity was formed. It signals this return to the human task of cultivation, stewardship, a fresh start.
But there's a but coming, I feel. There is, because while planting a vineyard can symbolize life, celebration, blessing, we know what happens next in the story, even if we aren't diving deep into those verses today. This very vineyard becomes the backdrop for, well, the first major failure in this supposedly new world. Noah's drunkenness, Ham's actions.
Right, the irony. The setting for the fresh start becomes the place of the first post-flood sin.
Precisely. It's a stark illustration. The world might be cleansed, but humanity, even the righteous hero Noah, remains fundamentally human,
yeah.
fallible. He carries the same potential for error. So you see this pattern emerging. God's grace is the constant, his promise holds, but human frailty, that remains the ongoing challenge, the variable.
So putting it all together then, these few verses, 15 to 20, what's the big takeaway? It feels like this incredibly efficient piece of writing, moving us from this vast, secure promise straight into the messy, uncertain reality of human life and relationships.
I think that's exactly right. If you connect it to the bigger picture, this short passage does so much groundwork. It really sets the stage for, well, the rest of Genesis. And you could argue much of the biblical narrative. It establishes this core dynamic, God's unwavering faithfulness, interacting with a flawed but still somehow hopeful humanity.
That tension.
Yes, that constant interplay between divine promises and human struggles. It's a reminder that new beginnings are real, but they don't just magically erase our inherent complexities or challenges. It prepares you for a story that's going to be about grace, working alongside and often in spite of human choices.
So we've journeyed through just six verses, but look how much is packed in there. We saw God's promise being framed as something he remembers, showing his deep commitment. Then that jarring shift, the lineage hinting at future conflict, planting seeds of unease right away. And finally, Noah's new beginning with the vineyard, tinged with the irony of future failure. It really shows how these ancient texts reward a close look, doesn't it? Finding layers of meaning even in familiar stories. Divine promises aren't presented in a vacuum. They exist right alongside human reality with all its potential and all its problems. Which leads to maybe a final thought for you, our listener, to mull over. What does it mean for us today that these foundational stories are so honest about human failings, that they show the seeds of conflict persisting, even when there's immense grace and a chance for a fresh start? How do we handle our own new beginnings, maybe in our lives, our jobs, our communities, holding on to both the promises we believe in and a realistic awareness of our own and others' enduring challenges? Something to think about. Thanks for joining us for the Deep Dive.